to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English. I'm Melissa Shimam. Twice a month, this podcast looks at one major issue on the continent, one country or one idea at a time. This week, we focus on how climate change affects Africa, notably global warming. While floods are devastating West Africa, in Southern Africa, about 68 million people are suffering the effects of an El Niño-induced drought, which has wiped out crops across the region. In Zambia, for instance, since January, most of the country has been experiencing an ongoing drought, described as the worst in the country in at least two decades. It is leading to severe food shortage, water scarcity, and the declaration of a national emergency, but it also affects the production of electricity. To know more about the situation on the ground and how to improve it, I speak this week with John Keane. He's the CEO of a UK-founded charity, SolarAid, and he's based in the capital, Lusaka. I started by asking him how harsh this exceptional drought has been for Zambian, and then asked about some solutions.
This year, there's been very little rain in parts of the country, certainly in the central and southern parts of the country. So, you know, there's a lot of drought, which is putting a lot of stress on smallholder farmers. But conversely, in the north of the country, there's been, you know, more rain than usual. So what you're seeing is flooding in the north, drought in the south. And I suppose that's sort of what we're seeing is there's two stark realities, really. You've got Lake Tanganyika in the north, and that's reportedly at its highest levels since 1964. So, you know, there's a lot of rain and water in the north of Zambia. Conversely, if you go to the south where the Kariba Dam is, that's at extremely low levels. And so they're actually talking about shutting down the Kariba Dam, you know, hydroelectric plant. That obviously generates a lot of the electricity for the country.
So in the case of SolarAid, could you maybe say when was a turning point for you regarding education to solar energy and what you think the lights are bringing to Zambia?
Zambia and much of sub-Saharan Africa, you know, if you look at the rural areas, just a very small percentage of the rural population have access to electricity. You know, you're talking between 2, 3, 4%. And so, you know, people are then living in houses without light, without any of the modern sort of electrical appliances that you would have grown up with. And so that actually makes life pretty difficult. Lighting at night, it's either candles, burning kerosene lights, or you've got torches, battery-powered torches. And obviously, the challenge with battery-powered torches is, one is you have to, the batteries only last for, you know, so long. The second is they cost money. And I suppose the third is, you know, you have to go to a local shop in order to buy battery. And many villages don't have local shops that stock batteries. So you actually have to travel significant distances just to buy a battery to turn on your light at night. So, you know, that's sort of the situation. And what's happened in the last 15 or so years, the solar industry and solar technology has gone on leaps and bounds. So the cost of solar panels, the technology involved in the batteries has got so much better. LEDs, light-emitting diodes, are extremely efficient forms of lighting. So when you put all those three ingredients together, you've got the technology is suddenly much more able to, I guess, create solutions at a price point that is more affordable for people living in rural communities. Well, that's what really technological developments and the reductions in price of solar technologies has really provided an opportunity to increase access to electricity in rural areas.
To understand how daily life has changed with such a severe drought, I also spoke to Kelly Huckabee. He's an American living in the outskirts of Lusaka and runs a charity welcoming children with his wife and five kids. He says solar power has been their only options regarding such a situation.
Living in Zambia for 14 years, we had a similar drought and water problem. In 2015, 2016, we had 12 hours every day of load shedding without power. So we started investing solar fans and larger solar options because it's sunny here, 300 days a year. The sun is shining. Whether it's cold season or hot season or rainy season, the sun is out pretty much all the time. We just had our power was out for 44 hours straight. Somewhere between 17 hours and 24 hours without power, maybe three times a week, is fairly common.
Now, according to Carla Kanyanga, who's the director of the social enterprise Sunny Money, supported by SolarAid, solar lamps can really help people in more rural area. And what people need the most is to be informed about it.
We work with agents across the country in very rural areas that don't have access to electricity. And so really our main focus and goal is to make sure that people that are living in rural Zambia aren't using candles and kerosene, and that they're getting the ability to get solar renewable energy that is safe and affordable. And so we have over 250 agents across the country that we work with. We've worked with the Ministry of Education since 2012 in Zambia. And so we've had access to any school across Zambia and do a schools campaign and do education to the communities on what solar is. Because when we started back in 2008, we were one of the first solar companies in Zambia. And so we had to do a lot of education and a lot of sensitization on what solar is.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So we did that through a schools campaign where we went into schools and worked with the children and the teachers as well as the local communities.
For John Keane, our CEO of SolarAid, solar energy might be the right way to support more people in Zambia and even more widely in the whole of Africa.
From a continent-wide perspective, the estimates are that there's 590 million people living without access to electricity. Now, we also estimate that about 150 million solar lights and products have been sold in the last 10 years across the continent, which is enabling an increasing number of people to, turn on electric lights for the first time, recharge mobile phones, etc. Obviously, getting accurate stats, statistics for deep rural areas is more difficult. And that's stuff that we're working on at the moment. So yes, we are seeing, and many social enterprises are seeing, a significant increase in sales of solar products and solar solutions. Now, in Zambia at the moment, a lot of that is being driven by the urban areas where people are, they generally have access to electricity, but at the moment there's rolling blackouts and they're managing with just a couple of hours of electricity a day. And so people are being forced to look at alternative options. And obviously solar lights and small solar home systems provide basic lighting and phone charging, which is also necessary in urban areas, not just to keep in touch with friends and family, but also for businesses and farmers to get in touch with each other, sell products and that sort of thing. So we've seen a significant increase in demand in urban areas, but obviously in the rural areas, that's where there's continuing high demand for solar products because they just don't have electricity access even when there is no drought. And that's a big challenge in deep rural areas. Majority of people are smallholder farmers. That means they get seasonal income. So, they're not getting a weekly or monthly wage. It's a seasonal income that they're generating. And then they have to carefully manage their finances because we're really talking about, survival. And what we're seeing, with huge populations, very dependent on regular rain patterns. And that's really what we're seeing at the moment. It's really putting huge stress on people who are really reliant on the rain to fall in a particular month in order to grow their crops and to eat and to sell so they've got money for the rest of the year or until the next season. That's the real challenge that we're seeing at the moment. And so if you have solar solutions for households, the poorest households will struggle to make that investment decision in purchasing a solar product because, they frankly need that money to keep living and make sure that they've got a better chance of reaching the next rain season.
How difficult was it for you to produce more? And do you think there's still need for more awareness around the fact that actually these lights exist?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. Look, I think... yes, there's always need for increased awareness. A lot of work has gone on in the last 10 to 15 years on increasing awareness, demand and trust in solar solutions. Now, there's, I suppose, two or three things I would say there. A solar product, it has a lifespan. So, the solar panel itself might last for 20 years, but the batteries invariably will need replacing every 4 to 5 years. So we need to work very hard on, and we've been working hard in catalyzing solar markets to build trust and so people access them. But then we also have to work hard with the wider industry to actually help repair and maintain the solar lights and products that are out there. And so that's a big part of what we're doing at the moment. Now, in terms of scaling, now SolarAid, and its social enterprise, Sunny Money, has distributed together with entrepreneurs about 2.4 million solar lights across the continent. Now, that sounds like a lot, but we also know that this is not about growing SolarAid as a charity. It's about achieving our mission. And you achieve that through partnerships. And so, that's the other figure I mentioned is maybe 150, 160 million. It's increasing. Solar lights and products have now been sold by so many partners across the continent, which is a huge success. But obviously scaling up, many of these products are not made in Africa. They're made just like, your iPhone might be made in in China, they're made generally in other parts of the world. And so then it's a big logistical effort to bring in container loads into ports across the continent. And then you've got huge amounts of cash tied up for 6 months between ordering stock and it arriving in the country in which you want to distribute the solar products. So that's a big challenge. But what we're trying to do is ensure that no one is left behind. So there's one thing: catalyzing a solar market, enabling people who can afford solar products to access them, whether or not they buy them upfront or they buy them in installments with pay-as-you-go technology. But invariably, there will be the poorest of households will still struggle to access electricity. Now, if you think about how you access electricity, it's generally you're not necessarily making an investment decision. You're not buying but you're generally not buying a solar home system. You're basically paying an electricity bill, and you pay for electricity each month or each quarter, and off you go. So what we're trying to do is overcome the barriers to access. So the people who can't afford to buy maybe a $10 system or a $100 system, we still believe they deserve to have access to the light and the products, the light and the electricity that those products provide. So we're trialing energy as a service where they don't have to purchase the system. They just pay to use the system to access it. And then you can really reduce the amount of money that is needed to access that electricity. And then if they do not own the system, that means the service provider has to maintain the system. So that also helps overcome the issues of systems falling into disrepair. So we're trialing those strategies. And frankly, you've got the Sustainable Development Goal number 7, which is, to achieve universal access to electricity by 2030. That's across the world. Now, the biggest challenge is in sub-Saharan Africa. And so we're trying to reach 100% of households in given communities, understand what it takes to achieve that 100%, and then share that knowledge with the wider development community so it can be replicated elsewhere. And so that's sort of our strategy in a nutshell. And the other thing I will say, it's not just about solar lights. It's not just about small amounts of electricity to power phones. There's also, these are climate vulnerable populations. And if they're dependent on increasingly rainfall patterns that are just uncertain, then there are ways in which you can use solar energy to power irrigation with smallholder farmers. And so we're doing trials in Malawi, as an example, with smallholder farmers. So they use solar-powered irrigation pumps so that they can actually have additional seasons of growth, growing crops, etc. And we believe that is also going to help build resilience to the ever-changing climate crisis and the stress it puts on communities. So it's not just about solar light and electricity. It's about how you can use electricity to boost resilience in local communities and essentially boost economic developments in rural communities as well.
That makes me think, just a final question, do you get support from national authorities or even local, because of you mentioning partnership, and it's lights or other systems are unaffordable for many locals. So is it possible to think, like, and I know the government's announcement now is just that they're going to close the dam and it feels like there's no alternative. So are you in discussion to maybe find a way to augment this response?
In order to address the energy challenges in Zambia and across the wider sub-Saharan Africa, it needs a multi-stakeholder approach, right? So us as a charity, and we work with deep rural communities, we work in partnership with them to address the challenges, overcome the barriers to access. But ultimately, we always work in partnership with rural local governments, district level governments, but then also national governments. So we work with them and discuss how we can scale up solutions, because ultimately the work that we're doing at the moment to scale it across the nation and deep rural communities, you really need to do that in partnership. And that's with the private sector, it's with the development actors, but also fundamentally with the government as well. So you need all the ingredients, but I think the strength of SolarAid as a charity is that it's our remit to prioritize the people who are being left behind. And so that's our measure of success. How do we achieve 100% of access? So that's sort of the criteria which we think about every day. Whereas, you know, a private company that needs to survive through its own sales, you know, quite rightly needs to look at its own bottom line for survival. So that's where we can work hand in hand with those partners to try and focus on, you know, the Leave No One Behind agenda, which is really trying to ensure that everybody gets access, not just those who can afford it.
Thanks again to all the people at SolarAid and their customers for sharing their experiences in Zambia with us. This was the latest episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. It was mixed by our sound engineer, Nicolas Dor. Thanks, Nicolas. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back soon to comment on more African affairs. In the meantime, for more African and French news, go to our website, rfi.fr/en.